Daryl, what's going on?
Everything's going good. Just got back from Miami. My wife and I did a Thursday through Monday vacation. Great weather, great food. I would definitely go back. And now I'm back to work, and we're full speed ahead. How about you? How are you doing?
That's awesome. Miami is one of my favorite cities. I sent you a restaurant recommendation. You said you didn't get a chance to go to it. So definitely bookmark it for your next trip out. My weekend was in Big Bear, California. So snow or fake snow and whatever is left of the real snow seems to have melted off. Except for the shadier sides of the mountain where there's not a lot of sunlight hitting it. There is still some like really lush powder up on the slopes there. But took my daughter tubing, you know, a little tobogganing or sledding. She did not want to do it and sort of cajoled her into doing it. And we did one run. And that was it for her. So.
Oh, she didn't like it? Did she get scared?
I think she said she liked it, but then I said, you want to go again? And then she said no. So I don't know. Probably not.
Sounds like she's not going to be a big fan of roller coasters.
She's three, so I'm sure she'll grow up with
it. Find out. Very cool. All right. So a lot of cool stuff to talk about today. The first thing that I wanted to talk about was the term GTM operations. And for the audience that doesn't know, GTM operations stands for go-to-market operations. And it seems to be one of the hot and new trending topics. What do you think about this term? And I'll share my thoughts, Jeff.
I think it's a big nothing burger, personally. Revenue operations and go-to-market operations, kind of the same. It is the same. So, you know, revenue operations, you know, folks might have some words to mince with it because revenue is a byproduct of go-to-market. And go-to-market is suggest an entire, you know, integrated department across marketing, sales, customer success, maybe even product, because you do go-to-market from the product side of the house. So it's a word that makes a lot of sense. But personally, RevOps sort of just rolls off the tongue better. So that's probably why it's stuck.
I think so. So when I look at this poll and my friend Charlie Saunders put this up, he says GTM operations is, and the poll choices were great. I use the term already. Interesting. I could use it. Meh, not into it. And the final one was we don't need another ops type. The winning term was, or the winning choice was, great, I use the term already at 41%. So a lot of people are into the term GTM operations. However, not too far behind at 21%, people said, we don't need another ops type, which I think is the category that you fall into.
That's hilarious.
I think that people are trying to hop on the bandwagon, and you know this well. Revenue operations was the hottest job title, I think, of 2023 or 2022. One of those years. Revenue operations, really popular thing. It's great. Now we think that GTM operations might see the same popularity or notoriety and also become a popular job title. So people are jumping onto it. That's what I think it means.
Yeah, I just think it's interchangeable. Right, you can call it go-to-market ops, you can call it go-to-market strategy, and enablement, whatever you want to call it, RevOps. I think we're all just talking about the same thing. It's just another way to brand or label a job function, and I think that's fine. I think back in the day in FP&A, they used to call it like budget and planning, BNP, and now we're calling it finance, planning, and analysis, and essentially many of the same things.
Here's an interesting one, because a lot of people challenge me on this, because I've been okay for the longest time that marketing ops and sales ops, revenue ops are separate. And I always challenge them this, because they say like, hey, why do you like being in a silo? And I have a ton of things to say about that, but I'll summarize it in, okay, number one, marketing and finance need to work closely together.
because they approve our budget. So in order for us to work together, should we form another group and combine us? And it's called Finarketing or Marketance. Like, is that necessary? So it's impossible for marketing and finance to work together because we're not in the same group. Is that right? The other thing is people mistakenly use the word silo. They think the word silo means separate. That is not true. Silo means making decisions without consulting your partners. You're making decisions alone. Marketing and sales aren't naturally siloed. They can work together, and they do in great organizations. And that is an alignment thing. That's a leadership thing. Do you know what I'm saying, Jeff? Or am I talking crazy?
Well, I think it boils down to org design and your tenets that you're trying to maximize. So, for example, if you have a centralized operations team, if you're the VP of marketing or the VP of sales, you're technically putting in a request for either tactical or strategic projects in a queue. And that queue is going to be, if you're first in, first out, or you have some sort of better prioritization methodology, it can feel like, as a VP of marketing or sales, you're losing the ability to do what you need to do quickly. So time is the issue. Now, if you have a decentralized organizational structure where you have marketing ops reporting into marketing, sales ops reporting into sales, sales and marketing can get what they want, but now you raise the coordination across the two teams. So sales and marketing ops are going to have to coordinate and work with each other to minimize those upstream and downstream impact. And I think, you know, when you think about revenue operations, it's born out of the need from a chief revenue officer to holistically look at the entire revenue engine. And I think you could still get by with either design. There's no right or wrong. You just have to know what the trade-offs are, and you have to hedge against those.
I love that. I think it's a good point. I think that I feel like we might be overweighting the coordination cost a little bit. I think that it could be as simple as a Slack message that says, hey, this is what we're doing. Hey, this is what we're going to leadership with. Hey, these are our plans. What do you think? Just giving you a heads up. I think that when it comes to maybe some larger decisions or complex decisions, that might be a little bit tough. And I can see the coordination cost going up a little bit. But I will tell you, you know, I get along really great with our finance partner. She just started. She lives in Irvine, which is awesome. So we had a coffee together. And before she goes to report on the finance number, she zooms me real quick and says, hey, this is what's happening. I don't see that as too much of a coordination cost, but I do see that it could be maybe at other organizations and maybe at even larger scale.
So speaking of which, when we talk about, you know, breaking down silos and figuring out how revenue operations or go-to-market operations can support teams, there's the concept of what goes onto the roadmap. And I always think about, you know, I asked a poll on LinkedIn, you know, what framework do you use to prioritize? And, you know, it gave four options. One, no framework, just a backlog. Second was kind of a 2x2 set of options, a value effort matrix or impact effort matrix, and then the classic Eisenhower matrix. Third was a weighted scoring methodology. Those are for the uber complex folks. And then fourth was the, you know, the Rice method, Moscow method, or the Kano method. I grouped all that together. And I'd be curious to hear from you what framework you personally use.
I love this. Real quick, what is the Kano method? That's the only one new to me.
Yeah, I'm not an expert in it, so let me pull it up online. But essentially, according to Qualtrics, it's a model that, I don't think this is ready. Customer delight versus implementation investment approach. It's an analysis tool that enables you to understand how customer emotional responses to products or features can be measured and explored. That seems very product management, but I'm sure it can be used from a go-to-market perspective if you view everything that we're building as a product for the go-to-market team.
Interesting. So this is a great poll. I'm glad you asked this question. My personal favorite is impact effort. which I think you have as value effort. That's my favorite. I also like the Eisenhower Matrix. I think because it's simple enough, but multidimensional enough to give you some different views on what priority should do. I will say, though, that I'm a big fan of weighted scoring, especially when you are trying to identify or prioritize projects or tasks or features or whatever, when you don't have a good read on the market or the industry. I think it's a much more objective way of doing it. I may have shared with you in the past too, I'm a big fan of the RICE prioritization method, which stands for reach, impact, confidence, and effort. I change it to marketers, revenue, confidence, and effort because I work in marketing ops and I think it works well. But I'd love to hear from you. Which one did you vote for and what's your favorite?
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of the value effort matrix. So simple example, you have three projects. One's retooling lead scoring. Second would be implementing CPQ. A third one would be ICP development. So you'd simply put two columns, value and effort. Values could be the ROI. So what is the impact to top line or what's the labor savings that you can multiply across and then attribute that to a dollar. And then the effort side of the house is going to be hours or weeks, some sort of unit of time. You can also incorporate skill level in there as well. And what you can do from there is put together a 2x2 across all of the different projects that are in place. And you can put them into quadrants within that XY axis. And there's going to be a series of options there. One, quick win, major projects, thankless tasks, and you can come up with the other categories. And what you want to do is figure out, what are my quick wins? Where can I gain credibility with the team? And then the major projects, well, I can't take on that many major projects across my org all at once because then we have an indigestion problem. Also, we may not deliver on the level of quality that we need for all of the concurrent projects. So the value effort matrix helps frame across what are all the priorities across the business. And then it gives you an opportunity to speak back or talk back to your partners around, why you're scoring it the way that you're scoring it.
Love it. Love it. I will say the last thing about impact effort and why I like it so much is it gives you some indication on what to do next. You really do need to implement the quick wins because it's not that hard and it's going to make a lot of impact. And you need that momentum to build a good reputation for the team and also to keep everyone's spirits up. Like, hey, we have this feeling of winning. And then the major projects go onto the roadmap. Like you said, maybe you can't do it this week, but you can do it this quarter. So I definitely love that. You sent me another interesting topic, which I think is super cool. And I'm a big fan of Kieran Flanagan, who was the former VP of marketing at HubSpot, now CMO at Zapier. And he had this post on AI making the data or sort of like more technical parts of marketing obsolete. What did you take away from this post, Jeff? And I'll share my opinion after I look at it a little bit more closely.
I'll read it a little bit, right? So he said, better data created a whole generation of marketers who twiddle knobs trapped in the pursuit of incrementality. AI is going to make their role almost extinct. Here's why. The growth of the internet resulted in a boom for marketing, and it gave us much better data to demonstrate the impact of our work. It gave marketing a seat at the revenue table, stopping it from being treated as a cost center. Because of that, the pendulum has swung heavily towards only doing things you can measure. CEOs mostly only value marketing they can see a direct return on. So marketers struggle to convince the CEO it's worth doing things that aren't measurable. So that's what basically what he said in short. And I think the TLDR is we've over-metric the role of marketing. So, for example, how do you put a value on brand? Right? The classic, brand is just enterprise value, minus book value, whatever's left over is goodwill or brand. Is that true? That's like an NBA way of looking at brand. But in reality, like when I go to the store and I'm thinking about, you know, comparing one product versus the other, if there's a brand that I connect with, I might be willing to pay a little bit more because of the brand.
Totally. Now that I read this more closely and I hear what you're saying about it, I can now see that it's not mostly about AI, but more of the focus on only managing things that, or only investing in things that you can measure and cutting things that you can't. I had a different version of this that I wrote, gosh, it's almost two, is it 2 years ago now? And the title of my article was, "Is MarTech in a Revenue Bubble and How Soon Will It Burst?" So here was my problem. I said that companies across industries were focusing way too much on revenue. Every single thing, piece of content needed to drive revenue. And it was forcing us to all look the same and forcing us to ignore things that you really couldn't track. And I listed out three really big things that I felt did, like, the whole revenue bubble is doing a disservice to. One is brand, like you mentioned before. I also mentioned community. If you build a community, you can't necessarily measure how much revenue it's bringing to the business. And once you start to try to do that, you know, it becomes very inauthentic. So community is so valuable, yet you can't, it's hard to tie that directly to revenue. The other one that I put was product-led growth. I thought that when the investment that you make to make the product easier to use, more intuitive, the investment you make into customer research and to user design and user experience, that's very difficult to calculate and get the data that you need, but it's so important. So I'm with you. I hear you. And I have one last thing to say about this. When I heard you say, sometimes the data doesn't tell us the whole story. There's this really interesting story about Jeff Bezos. You and I both worked at Amazon before. And back in the day, this is from the book, The Everything Store, if anyone's interested. But there was a big debate in the past when Amazon was first starting about posting customer reviews. All of the data said, okay, if we post customer reviews on products, sales will go down. They are definitely going to go down. The data proves it. We've shown it. We've tested it. The data will, the sales will go down if we show the customer reviews. Jeff Bezos said, I don't care. This is what's best for customers. This is what's best for the business long term. Put in the customer reviews. They did it, and look where they are today. So I always caution people, be data informed, not data driven. Think about what the data means, but make smart long-term decisions for what's best for the business, what's best for the customer.
I love that. So we talk about the data and the narrative coming together, right? And sometimes you do things because it's the right thing to do. And it doesn't always have to be, you know, every cent, every dollar. You don't have to be coin operated for every little thing. So for example, like when I'm supporting my marketing peers, the one thing I always ask is, okay, well, is the entire budget allocated towards like performance marketing? What's left over for brand and experience? Because, why do you starve brand and experience? I know it's difficult to measure, but you know, you have to leave some room for a little bit of grace and something that you can't really measure. And, you know, I think revenue operations or go-to-market operations folks, we always say lead with the data, right? And we all agree, the data looks good. Let it drive the decisions. But at the end of the day, sometimes you just have to think through, well, there are some other intangibles that might actually be worth more. It's just hard to measure.
True. I mean, look, if a new sales leader, brand new, asks another sales leader, hey, what CRM should I use? And they say Salesforce. What's the value of that? What's the value of that brand? What's the value of them not even looking into any other tools, right? So there's something to be said about brand. I will share one more story about where the data kind of doesn't tell the whole story
I did what many demand gen marketers did, I don't know, 6 to 8 years ago, and I ran the gift card campaign. Everyone knows the gift card campaign. Do a demo, and we'll give you a $50 Amazon gift card for your demo. I ran it. Guess what? The salespeople hated it, right? They thought it devalued the product. It devalued their expertise. With the data, I was able to show that opportunities were up and that qualified meetings were up. But what it didn't show was the rift that it wedged in between sales and marketing and how poorly they thought of us and the campaign. There were some intangibles there that didn't tell the whole story. I finally removed that program, and it took months to repair the relationship between sales and marketing. Did the data show that? No. Would the data ever show that? I don't think so. I don't think so.
I mean, I always think it was gift card campaigns as Santa Claus campaigns. Let's just give out a bunch of like DoorDash gift cards for $25, $50. And quite frankly, I value my time way more than $25, $50. I am not taking a demo for that amount of money. No way.
I don't either. I don't know. What amount of money would you take a demo for, Jeff?
Send me a bottle of Dom.
You know what? I might do that too. I might. Macallan whiskey is mine. Love Macallan.
Oh, weakness.
Scott.
Oh, you're about to get hit up by all these SDRs, but it's Sendoso or Alice gifts.
Oh, please. Please do. I got to stock up. So, yeah, really good poll. Really good one there. I think we had another topic, and I posted this one. I'll give you a little bit of some background. I'm always curious because marketing ops and revenue ops is kind of a newer functions, and there's not really a clear career path. So the poll that I posted on LinkedIn, what do you think is the career goal of most marketing ops professionals? The options are VP of Marketing Operations, Chief Marketing Officer, VP of Marketing Technology, or Other. Now, I saw that you get more engagement on a guide if you put Other. So I started to do that. But if I didn't put Other, I would have put starting my own business, like my own consulting firm. That's what I put, or independent consulting, fractional consulting, whatever. But I didn't. I put Other. Anyway, before I reveal the answer, what do you think the answer is, Jeff?
I have no clue, to be honest. So I didn't start off like marketing operations in my career. I've always sort of taken over marketing operations whenever my marketing ops manager would leave or go on vacation. So I'm not really in the mindset. I've also found that a lot of my marketing operations, you know, leaders or folks who've reported to me actually were former marketers themselves. And so they've embrace the technology side of it. But I'd imagine they'd probably want to become a VP of marketing operations rather than a CMO. CMO has a much more on their plate than, you know, VP of marketing ops.
I think so. I have a couple of thoughts about that. Well, let's reveal the winner of the poll first. The winner of the poll is actually Chief Marketing Officer and it's 40%. However, VP of Marketing Operations, which is what I selected as well, is 35%. So it's not too far off. I will say that I've gone back and forth with this a little bit. I mentioned to my friend, one of my mentors, who's actually a VP of Marketing Operations herself. She's a VP of Marketing Operations at A&E Networks. And I told her, hey, I'm not sure if I could ever do like be a VP of marketing or CMO because I'm not as interested in the brand side of things or the creative side of things. And she told me that I need to rethink that because the chief marketing officer needs to really be the business leader of the marketing department. And you don't necessarily need brand experience or creative aptitude. So I definitely go back and forth. But currently, My choice is VP of Marketing Operations. I will say one of the most popular comments with 23 engagements on a comment was by John McTeague. He says, I don't think title is much of a career goal. After all, we have plenty of people holding lofty titles who are unqualified for the job. It's also pretty meaningless in the grand scheme of things, what are better goals? Having a happy, healthy life and giving back to the community. What do you think about that comment?
John's hilarious. Love him. Also, I'm surprised no one said, well, I mean, you only get four options in LinkedIn. So, you know, VP of RevOps, and then I saw a few folks chime in with CRO. I don't know. It's interesting. I personally learned a lot from your calls around the marketing operation psyche. So I think it's one of the reasons why we always have this call every week, where you and I can learn and grow from each other and share it with the audience.
Yep. I love that too. I think that, well, I do see CRO as one of the popular options with 13 likes. Blaine Tedderton said CRO is her main goal. I will say with some of these more snarky comments, it's very easy to find the flaws in a very limited capability of poll of LinkedIn. So I always get people that are snarky and say stuff like all of the above, or, you know, why don't you have this option? Why do you have that option? The truth is, like you said, we only get so many options and we don't get very many characters. So we do the best that we can.
Well, we need to get our newsletters up and running to a large degree, a large audience, and we can start writing these polls in there.
I think so. Anything else on your mind, Jeff, that you want to talk about?
No, I think that's it. Always happy to chat with you, Daryl, and we'll sign off for now and get ready for next week.
Likewise. I'll see you next time.
All right. Catch you later.